I'm Brittany Luce, and welcome to Sampler, the show where we play you handpicked moments from podcasts that you just have to hear. On today's show, we are talking about the inescapable pop cultural phenomenon that is Beyoncé's sixth studio album, Lemonade. She premiered it as an hour-long music video on HBO on April 23rd. It's Beyoncé's most ambitious, personal, and political artistic work, and the conversation around it has been nonstop since it dropped. For better or for worse, whether you like it or not, Lemonade is everywhere. And this gives us the perfect opportunity to look at the world of podcasting in the aftermath of a singular major event. So today we're taking a long, hard look at how a bunch of different podcasts gulp down their lemonade. And even if you haven't seen it, don't worry. There is still plenty of refreshing discussion to go around. But before we get started, allow me to note that while Lemonade is delightfully sweet, some of the themes and language in this episode are more on the tart side. So if you're babysitting Blue Ivy or hanging around any other youngsters, now's a good time to pause and slip in some earbuds. So sipping on lemonade with me today is Kiana Fitzgerald of NPR Music. Kiana, thank you so much for coming on Sampler.
Thank you for having me, Brittany.
Oh my God, my absolute pleasure. So full disclosure, Kiana is a friend of mine and also a really talented music journalist for NPR Music. And Kiana, you actually did a review for NPR like immediately after Lemonade came out.
I did.
Tell me about it.
So the process was really stressful because I had no time to listen and ingest and like figure out what does this mean. Uh-huh. So it was really like, okay, I'm going to seclude myself for like the next however many hours I had until I had to like tape and track and everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, it was a really emotional thing for me. Like, because the themes within Lemonade, especially visually, are about like the Black female experience. So going through that album again and again and again was a lot.
Let's actually hear a little bit of that review.
Beyoncé couldn't have produced an album this defiant or blunt 2 years ago. Lemonade has been made possible by the cultural, social, and political upheaval we're in the midst of. Triggered by the deaths of boys and fathers who will never be forgotten, by the pain of the women who love them. We've all been changed by these events. Beyoncé may be a machine, but she's changed too. And so has Serena Williams, actress Amanda Stenberg, literary giant in the making Worsen Shire, and the other figures featured front and center in the visual version of the album. From the women who look like my mom and my aunties and my cousins, to the women carrying the grief of a nation, the mothers of Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Mike Brown. I really got to say exactly what I wanted to say as a Black woman. And I'm very grateful that NPR didn't, you know, strip out my voice and make me be more objective about it than I could have been, because this is about me in a way, too.
So Beyoncé's Lemonade was organized into chapters that show different stages of this musical journey, different stages of, like, I guess, how you maybe reconcile after infidelity in a relationship, ranging from intuition to anger to redemption. It was kind of like the Kubler-Ross model of the five stages of grief, right? So for our sampling of Lemonade, we are organizing this show into chapters as well.
Beautiful.
We are going to explore the different stages of consuming Lemonade.
It should be fun.
All right, let's get started.
Let's do it.
So our first stage is experiencing pure joy. Our first clip is from The Read.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Of course. So The Read is a podcast hosted by Kid Fury and Crystal. Anyone who has heard their show knows how much they love. I don't even know if that's a strong enough word.
No, it's not.
They just love Beyoncé. So naturally, when Lemonade came out, they expressed a whole lot of, let's say, enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
This bitch is only getting better. And the fact that she topped herself after self-titled, which I, frankly, I
was worried.
Everybody
was like, what is going to happen next?
I was worried about Lemonade. I was like, I mean, what if this flops? Because how can she outdo self-titled? Like, what is she even
going to do?
Right. And
like
she was
this,
like,
bitch, know me.
Bitch, straight like this, like a goddamn movie. And next time, bitch, you'll be paying $25 to watch it in the theater. Like, and you're right, B, I will. If Beyonce puts her next album out in fucking theaters, I will buy a ticket and take my ass to go experience it. Because she has shown me that she is more than willing to do the work as an artist to only get better and improve. Like,
I only expect for Martians to be doing the Millie Rock in her next video or something.
I can't deal with how brilliant this woman is. And I cannot, I love that she has these concepts and ideas and then hires the right people and connects with the right teams to get her vision done.
Her visuals, my nigga,
bitch,
are top
they're
notch.
They're beautiful. Like, every fucking frame is a photo, girl.
Parkwood could direct a movie with Beyonce not even in it,
woo!
And that shit would just be beautiful. Like,
woo!
The shots are just so
gorgeous.
Great.
They're
like,
gorgeous.
Like,
I'm sick of this, bitch.
It.
I'm sick of
it. I cannot take it.
God damn.
It is too much. I can't handle it. It's all happening
bitch.
To me again. I've watched Lemonade seven times in the past few days. I listened to the album nonstop. The only thing that I may have listened to other than that is some gospel, bitch, because I had to get on the same page as Christ the King to be like, Lord, thank you, Jesus. Thank you.
Where were you when you first heard, watched, saw Lemonade?
I was with my best friend Greg at his house, and we were watching it on HBO Go, but we didn't know if it was going to pop up, like, immediately.
Mm.
So we were just, like, refreshing, like, oh my God, please, please, please. So finally it popped up, and, like, of course we screamed, and then we pressed play and didn't say a word. I was kind of just, like, looking out of the corner of my eye, like, looking at him, like, is this happening? What's going on here? What is this?
So Crystal mentioned in the clip that the next logical step for Beyonce, because, like, you know, okay, so the first thing she did, 2013, she, like, released an album just on Thursday night,
yeah,
like, after Scandal was over,
yeah,
and had all of the songs and all the videos at once. And then it's kind of like, well, how are you going to top that? And obviously, you know, like, she's like, oh, okay, I'm going to put a musical, just like an hour-long music video of the entire album HBO.
Yeah.
Crystal said the next logical step is obviously she has to, like, release it in the theaters.
Yeah.
And, like, with the release of Lemonade, you know, Beyonce has redefined the concept of, like, the album release again.
Again, yeah. I think she's fucking brilliant. And I'm very, honestly, like, I'm trying to be objective, but there's only so much you can, like, skirt around somebody's pure, like, passion and commitment to being great. And she is in a position where she can make these calls to, like, say, you know what, I do want to, like, have a secret album, and I do want to, like, present this on HBO as a cinematic experience so everybody can be watching this together at the same time, so we can, like, live tweet it together and lose our minds together. Anytime that somebody is able to just bring people together in that way, I'm all about it. So thank you, Beyonce.
So that brings us to, like, the next phase.
Okay.
Lemonade permeating unexpected places.
Mm.
So, like, you know, it kind of had this, like, weird world-stopping effect where even if you don't like Lemonade, you couldn't help but be, like, affected by the fact that it came out.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? You kind of have to, like, be living under a rock to not notice.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, we kind of knew at Sampler that, you know, definitely pop culture podcasts would have something to say about Lemonade.
For sure. It's a cultural event.
Right. But it was such a huge moment that talk of Lemonade showed up in some places that, like, we just did not see coming. And one of the first places, actually, that it showed up is the podcast we're featuring in our next clip. It's the Slate Show Trumpcast, hosted by Jacob Weisberg. Trumpcast is a show that's all about trying to understand who Donald Trump is.
Okay.
And why Trump mania is taking over our country. So most of the show is Jacob interviewing experts about Donald Trump, but it's not all serious. Like, sometimes they'll have a Trump impersonator read his latest tweets. Yeah, no, I said Donald Trump. Yes.
Just clarifying.
Just to clarify.
Thank you. Thank you.
And yet this clip is also about Lemonade. So it's a sketch written and performed by Steve Waltine of the Chicago improv group Second City. So the premise is that it's an email exchange between Republican presidential hopefuls, well, former hopefuls, Ted Cruz and John Kasich. This podcast came out before they dropped out of the race. And in this clip, Cruz and Kasich are trying to strategize against Donald Trump, but keep on getting a little distracted.
Sunday, April 24, 2016, 8:06 a.m. Governor John Kasich to Senator Ted Cruz. Ted, I'm relieved our people were able to work out an arrangement on this. I gather announcements will be made soon, and we can both continue our campaigns with a mutual acknowledgement that a Trump nomination is bad for both party and country. I am sorry I haven't been able to reach out personally yet, but I've been very busy since Beyonce dropped this full album on us last night. Karen and I basically spent the evening with our jaws on the floor. How does she do it? Senator Ted Cruz to Governor Kasich, 8:49 a.m. John, I too am glad clear terms could be agreed on. Although our campaigns differ a great deal in ideas, I know we share a common concern for our party and a sense that Donald's candidacy is destructive to the process and bad for the American people. Re, Queen Bey, unbelievable. Heidi and I were up all night with this thing. The visuals are stunning. Where does she find the time? She's a force of nature. Governor Kasich, 9:36 a.m. Ted, Weaver is telling me we need to be sure about ground rules for Indiana. It's important to me also that our statements are worded similarly, and that both campaigns stay on message when the inevitable Trump attacks come. As for Queen Bee, I'm just in awe of her ability to continually create compelling work and explore new facets of herself as an artist. I'm really responding to the personal nature of the lyrics on these tracks. So brave of her to explore the hardships of her marriage in a public light while still having strong, united family images at the end of the piece. Senator Cruz, 10:19 a.m. John, ground rules will be important, and Jeff Rowe in my office will be very precise about turning over files to you on our existing ground strategies in the states. I know my people are drafting something now in a variety of directions on Donald's response. Again, my whole team was totally sidelined this weekend with Beyonce's Lemonade. I think we all needed time to take the whole thing in and digest. When it comes to her exploration of marriage, I think it's particularly profound in a country where the institution of marriage is under attack. Kasich, 11:01 a.m. Ted, I'm glad you brought up conservative values. It's important to me to get the message to voters that a vote for Donald is a vote against the interest of anyone who is a true conservative. I wish they understood how empty Donald's feigned concern for them is. I want to say to these voters, he don't love you like I love you. LOL. But I could never do it with the grace and flawlessness of Queen Bey. Cruz, 11:56 a.m. Agreed. Very glad we were able to find common ground on this. I swear, if Trump wins the nomination, I will take a baseball bat to every car on my block, Bay style. Kasich, 12:04 p.m. LOL, I'll join you, Bay for life. Cruz, 11:12 p.m. Seriously, so, so good. Can't stop watching it. See you in Cleveland.
Very interesting.
But this is like the very last place that I expected to find. Literally a Donald Trump podcast.
Yeah.
This is the last place I expected to find a Lemonade clip. What does this say to you about like the reach? Because one of the things that you said about the album, which I agree with, is like it's a really black female thing, right? Yeah. But it's also this thing that was like super widely released.
Yeah. Like, it's everybody's, like, you know, as much as it is very specifically directed toward black women, this is everybody's album because she is Beyonce. You know, she has performed at the Super Bowl more than once.
She's once in the past 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, she's a part of our country. Like, she might as well be on the fucking flag. Like, she's a part of us. So I can understand why, you know, I can listen to a Donald Trump podcast and still hear about her because she is, like, woven throughout the fabric of what we do in America.
One of the things about Beyonce, for better or worse, being a part of like the national fabric is that even though she gives us very little information in general about like her life, all of us are wrapped up in her personal business. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, absolutely.
Everybody's thirsty for photos or video of her wedding. Mm-hmm. When her baby came, everybody was just like, I need to know more about this child immediately. Yeah. Pretty much like anything having to do with her personal life causes some sort of media frenzy. So that brings us to our next stage.
Yes.
Determining if Lemonade is autobiographical or simply art. So our next clip is from an ESPN podcast called Jalen and Jacoby. So it's a sports and pop culture show hosted by retired NBA player Jalen Rose and sports commentator David Jacoby. So in this clip, they are addressing the debate over whether or not Lemonade is autobiographical or, you know, just a piece of art that Beyonce put out there for all of us to take in. So here is Jalen telling David his theory.
Beyonce has become a global superstar and has selectively used her voice over this period of time. She's always stayed classy. She's always been disciplined. And she's always been calculating.
Very calculated. Same with Jay-Z.
Both of them are masters, okay? There's a reason why they're elite at what they do. I ain't taking this as her and Jay-Z are too intelligent to air so much dirty laundry when they just had a daughter.
Do you remember when they were on tour? Do you remember what dominated that summer's headlines? Oh, they're going to get divorced. Are they ready to divorce? Who's cheating on who? And what's happening? They were in the headlines all summer long. Do you know what else they were in? The money. Because that's how this works.
I want to say this. I learned a couple of things. You never judge what's going on in someone else's relationship.
No, there's only two people that know what's going on in a relationship, and those are the people involved. No one else has 100% of the story. No one in the world. No matter how much you think you know, you don't know.
Your best friend, male or female, is not telling you everything that they talk about with their mate.
No. They're giving you one side. They're filtering it.
That's why it's called pillow talk. You're not around. Mm-hmm. And so what I truly think is this is Beyonce being an artist, just like when you go to a movie, somebody's reading a script, and they are playing it out for public consumption. They put something out on television as well.
Jalen. You think they made this whole thing up?
I'm not rolling.
You think they made this whole thing up?
This is why. You ready for this?
Tell me.
Because I think if it was this deep, at the end of that documentary, it would be her packing her stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Which side of this argument are you on? Do you think that it's like, do you think it's fact or fiction?
I haven't had to say this out loud yet. I've just been like thinking about this in my head for ever since it came out.
Because so we're getting exclusive.
Yeah, this is exclusive. I feel like it's largely autobiographical. And I feel like there might be some parts. I do.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make this
that was pretty. That was like a what? Yeah. It just seems like if this isn't autobiographical, then Jay-Z is a really good and brave man to put himself in this position to be heavily scrutinized and like villainized in the media across the country in like barbershops, beauty shops, whatever. Like, if this isn't real, then he's a really, really good dude for being able to take this on.
Did you, when you first watched it, did you watch it while tweeting?
Yeah, I tweeted a few times.
So, for personal reasons, somebody made me go out and leave the house.
Oh.
So, on Saturday night, I was out of the house. I left the house at 9:15. I was crying on the train to where I was going. But I came back at like 4, and I was like, we're about to watch Lemonade. Like, this is what's happening watching right now. So, yeah. I watched it without anybody like tweeting or anything like that.
Oh.
So, when I took it in, it was just me by myself crying. Like, you know, crying because I had spent all this money on Tidal, crying because it was 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was making myself, I was committing to watching an hour-long visual masterpiece when I was obviously sleepy.
Yeah.
I thought the infidelity stuff was, like, allegory. I actually didn't think it was, like, for real. Also, Beyonce sings about getting cheated on every 6 months.
She does.
All the songs in the beginning when she was like, oh, you cheated on me. I was like, I know, you sing about this. You've been singing about this since you were 15 years old. So I was just like, okay, whatever.
Interesting.
But then the next day, I sort of like got caught up on Twitter. And then I realized a lot of people really thought that this thing was real.
Yeah.
And then upon like 6 more viewings, you know, which I did happily.
Yeah.
There are a couple parts in the beginning where Beyonce was so angry.
Yeah.
That I was like, you might actually not be making this up.
Exactly. Exactly. I was just like, hold up. Like, she's, you know, throwing her ring at the camera, saying, like, you're going to lose your wife if you pull the shitty. Like, she was it just seemed very pointed. And like, even in Sorry at the end, where she says, big homie, you know, better grow up. Like, yeah, that is obvious. Obviously Jay-Z's nickname. So it's like she's putting very specific pronouns and like phrases and very pointed visual effects. It makes it seem like this is very personal and very real.
So I saw it more of like just the difficulty and anger and pain come, or loneliness that can come from just terrible things. That's what I latched onto when I watched Lemonade initially. As much as I do enjoy celebrity gossip, I still kind of was like, does it actually matter? Do you know what I mean? Like, does it actually matter whether or not it's autobiographical art?
I personally don't think it matters. I think that her message remains the same, you know? It's about infidelity, it's about accountability, responsibility. People should try not to focus on the gossip parts, if possible. I know it's sexy, but it has no bearing on the actual content that she put out there.
This idea of whether or not Beyoncé's work is fact or fiction, autobiographical, really like her intent and integrity as an artist. Mm-hmm. Sort of intertwined with this whole conversation is like the question of Beyoncé's authenticity, which we will talk more about after the break.
Okay.
So hold that thought.
I will.
And we will be right back with more Lemonade.
Yeah.
I try to practice all these different ways of saying Lemonade.
I'm into it.
So welcome back to Sampler. In the studio with me, I have Kiana Fitzgerald of NPR Music.
Hello, hello.
She recently reviewed Beyoncé's album, Beyoncé's visual masterpiece, Lemonade, for NPR. So at the end of the first half of the show, we talked about whether or not it's autobiographical. That kind of is connected to this idea of how authentic Beyoncé is, or how authentic her her image is. So that brings us to our next stage, socioeconomic implications. Yeah. Did you see that one coming?
No, I should have.
So this next clip comes from Talk Poverty Radio. It's a show that examines issues around poverty in this country. It's co-hosted by Tracy Ross and Rebecca Vallis of the Center for American Progress. The first voice you'll hear in this clip is host Tracy, followed by her CAP colleagues, Mariam Adamu and Constance Torian. They're talking about the imagery Beyoncé has been using in her most recent work and what it means from a socioeconomic perspective.
Actually, no, one thing that I thought about, because I've heard other people say things, because apparently all I do is just read about Beyoncé, but I've heard read other people say things like, well, you know, how is this woman who is in a billion-dollar family going to try and connect to, you know, embrace cultures that aren't hers, even if it's lower-income people in the U.S., those sorts of things, by having her walking through New Orleans, walking through her old hometown in Houston, Texas. But I say this on the show all the time. The average African-American family making $100,000 a year in this country lives in a more disadvantaged neighborhood than the average white family making $30,000 a year. And so I feel like, despite the fact that her paycheck is now out of the stratosphere, Black people in this country, I feel like, regardless of class, are in these sorts of communities that she features throughout the video. And so for me, I mean, when you're saying the third ward, third world connection, I mean, it's very real that regardless of your stature in society, if you're a Black person, you're going to be in the places that are suffering the most. So
I feel, if it's not you, it's like your family or your
exactly
family.
Like, exactly.
I don't buy that, like, Beyoncé doesn't understand, like, a low income Black life, but like, I'm not saying that, like, she, like, lives that on a day-to-day basis, but I feel like kind of what you're saying, like, your social world as, like, a Black person, I think, is, like, kind of always being tied to, like, multi-income levels and, like, various situations. And, like, even me, like, in my, like, comfortable, like, American life, I have, like, tons of family members living in Nigeria who are in, like, deep, deep poverty. I, like, live in a town that's, like, the fastest shrinking in America. So, like, I, like, can both, like, I think visually people will be like, oh, you know, young professional. But, like, my social world back home and where my physical home is located is like one of the poorer struggling towns in like the outskirts of the Mississippi Delta. So like it's really hard to like make those distinctions, I think, specifically for Black people.
And I also think that people have been asking that, you know, that Beyonce become a little bit more real for some time now and be human and notice that she's paying attention. I think the entire time I watched this, I was like, no, she's real. She's paying attention. She realized all of these struggles. So it's like, do you want her to say something or not? Because now we're talking about it and we weren't before. And like, she's going to, it seems like she's going to keep making us talk about it, which I think is really important. So I don't know. I don't get mad that she's representing or putting things in Lemonade that she might not live on a daily basis, because I think that helps, like, again, expose things to people who aren't, don't think of things that way.
So she said some people have gotten mad that she is representing for lower income people. What?
What do you think?
Well, I think that what she did with this visual album in terms of focusing very, very directly on the way that Black people live in this country, which in the clip largely is either beneath or very near the poverty line, or mm-hmm. even if they are at a higher class monetarily, they still will be in situations where they're not in the best environment. So it's obviously something that has been screamed about in this country in certain rooms and conversations mm-hmm. for decades. And for somebody like her at her level to very directly put these women who look like my mom and my aunt and my sister, like these women that I very strongly identify with, for her to do that, I feel was very, very necessary. And I don't think that there is any reason for anybody to think that she's inauthentic for doing that. If anything, it's the complete opposite.
The other thing that I think that a lot of people don't realize, a lot of non-Black people don't realize, is that in the United States, so Black people only had freedom for so long.
Yeah.
And so when you haven't had the opportunity to build generational wealth, like Beyonce seems like she grew up middle class, upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
But the chances are really high that like her parents did not.
Mm-hmm.
And also that like her family was not in that economic class for her entire lifetime.
Absolutely.
I know that that's that way for my family. Like my older sister is 6 years older than I am. The way that my immediate family was living when my sister was young is completely different than the way that my family was living when I was six.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. 6, 7, 8, 9. Totally different than Absolutely. It was for my older sister. Because, like, when you don't have, like, generational wealth, or when you don't have, like, generations of your family being able to attend college
mm-hmm.
or, like, even just, like, attain professional skills. Or even, like, I think of, like, my grandfather, even though he served in the military and, like, got a 4-year degree, he still had to go get, like, an additional certificate in mortuary science because it was, like, difficult to get a job.
Damn.
You know, he's from Mississippi. So, like, a family of the generation that Beyonce grew up in, like, your economic status can change over time. And then also if you factor in, you know, family, you know what I'm saying? Family, bloodline, friends.
Yeah. Friends, cousins, like aunts and uncles. Not everybody in Beyonce's family is living at her level, period. Well, and it's not like she's cut off from them. Like, we've seen the pictures of her at, like, weddings and, like, family gatherings and stuff. Like, she is out here in spaces where she is not, like, on jets and on yachts. Like, she's not always in that setting. So I think it's ridiculous and unfair for people to like say that, no, you can only speak about this small, you know, sector of society.
Is Beyonce spurring real action in terms of, or even just change in thought in terms of how people think about poverty? Do you think that like there's something to her placing herself in contexts where people don't think that they'd see not just her, but even a Black woman like her? Maybe,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think she absolutely is. Most identifiably, I think, formation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when she's in the beauty shop or the beauty supply store and she has the Black girls with the different color hair and, mm-hmm. like, one of them's wearing a silk wrap or whatever. And same situation with Don't Hurt Yourself in the visual album when she has that moment where she has a Malcolm X clip.
Call me Malcolm X.
The most disrespected person in America is the Black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the Black woman. The most neglected person in America is the Black woman.
She very deliberately, I feel, uses shots of women that look normal or that look like the women that you think is too loud on the subway, or you think like, oh, I don't want her, you know, mm-hmm. sitting next to me on the bus. Like, these are real women, and I feel like her very you know, deliberately putting them in the front of the camera in the way that she did was an attempt, if anything, to like show people like, yeah, these are like real humans and you can talk to them and they have emotions and they deserve to be protected.
It also makes me think about like, just judging by like a general litmus test of the internet, there are a lot of people who have very little concept of Beyonce being a Black woman, like any other Black woman. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think that in putting herself in different contexts and bringing women from contexts that people assume that Beyonce does not ever enter into, mm-hmm. by like putting herself, like aligning herself with those women, and aligning those women with her, she's sort of saying like, what's any different? Like, there's nothing different about me than these women inside the beauty supply store.
Yeah.
There's no, and even the fact that she had a shot inside a beauty supply. Most people don't know what the inside of a beauty supply store looks
like.
Which
is crazy to me. I spent my whole life in there.
Literally every single Sunday after church, we went to the beauty. There weren't any good ones out in Farmington Hills, Michigan.
No.
So we would, when we went to Detroit to go to church, afterward we would go to the beauty supply, Lee Beauty Supply, of which there are 10,000 in the Detroit area. But I'm actually glad that you brought up hair.
Yes.
Because that kind of connects to, actually, it directly connects to our next clip, which brings us actually to our final phase.
Crazy.
Yeah, so our final phase, which I'm sure you've experienced, I know I've experienced, explaining Lemonade to white people. So this next clip is from BuzzFeed's Another Round, which is hosted by Tracy Clayton and Havana Gattu, friends of the show who have appeared on Sampler before. So in this episode, their guest is writer Nicole Perkins. And it's the three of them talking about this one specific line of Lemonade, arguably the most famous line of the album.
He better call Becky with the good hair.
So Nicole and Heaven and Tracy are all talking about these like think pieces that came out after the album, which were about this line and how it was supposedly racially charged or reverse racism or whatever. And one celebrity in specific who was getting all caught up in the meaning of the line. The first voice you're going to hear is Heaven's, followed by Tracy.
First of all, Iggy Azalea
was
like,
God.
Don't call me a Becky. That's offensive.
Shut up, Becky.
She just needs to sit down someplace. Period.
I'm Julie Slimy. But there's just, there's she this weird, up. I feel like white girls do this thing where like they know they're not a part of something. Like this is not explicitly about me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to turn the attention to about me. And there's this like, there are these articles that are like, I too am Becky with the good hair. Girl, what?
Like, what was the thing that happened earlier? The glamour thing, British glamour or whatever.
Taking back Becky or something.
Like, taking back Becky. This also happened when the phrase. This happened when basic, the phrase or the word basic was blowing up.
Oh my
gosh.
And
they're like, you know what? Let me reclaim this.
I have finally found my oppression.
Oh my God. It's like. I find it so wild how white people cannot consume a product that is not explicitly for them, where the rest of the world has been doing that their entire lives.
And they can't even quietly not consume it.
Like,
you can just not hit play, you know?
You could just not tweet.
You could not
write this full article.
They cost you nothing.
Free 99.
This is also showing me that white people have no idea what good hair is or what it means.
Oh, yes!
So
it's
I
like, please note their hair is excellent. It's
right.
Like,
come on now. What are you guys
I think okay. What Heaven said, you tweeted that Becky with the good hair is actually a state of ideas or something like that.
It's not a person. It's a state of mind.
I kind of agree with that. I think that she's just really like, there's somebody else
there's
out
a type.
There.
Yeah.
And my mother, who's going to hate me that I'm saying this, my mother is like, yeah, Beyonce, she got some rough stuff. So anybody's got good hair.
We never said that. Beehive, do not come for us. Do not at us.
Beyonce, don't have gorgeous hair.
Don't endanger my mother.
Don't go after Nicole's mama.
But, do you think a Becky is necessarily white?
I think this is how Beyonce threw us off because of the history of good hair. It's what's closest to whiteness, right?
Right.
And so you don't need to qualify.
Yeah.
White Becky. Becky. It's a given.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like Becky is a definite reference to whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people who are deemed, quote, not Black enough or like some sort of like, quote, exotic Black or whatever, if the implication is that they are not like in touch with like their brownness or whatever, then they too can be considered a Becky.
That is how I interpreted
it. Yeah, me too. I don't, because you would, because white girls don't have good hair. White girls have white girl hair. Mm-hmm. You know, when we try to get white girl hair, we hope for good hair, right? So that's not a characteristic that an actual Becky would have, I don't think.
Agreed. Yeah. I love that Nicole in that clip said that Beyonce threw us off with that line because Becky and good hair are very separate ideas. Because, like, Becky is obviously, like, I'm sorry, Iggy, like, you get the fuck over it. But, like, Becky is, like, a word that is used to kind of encapsulate a white woman or a white girl. And then you have good hair, which is, like, it's very situated in the black community. So, as they said, it's more about how close can you get to whiteness? Not whiteness, period. Like, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say white people have good hair. No disrespect. But, like, that's not something that's ever been uttered in my presence. It's always been about how loose is your curl pattern?
Yeah.
How silky is your hair? So that's kind of Beyonce throwing us off. And I also agree with the fact that it's more of an idea of like the other woman. She's just saying like, go get that girl over there if that's what you really want. She's not saying that it is a white girl or she's not saying that it is X, Y, or Z. It's just like a way that she's presenting this other woman.
I kind of took it that same way. I took it as like, she's just like, she's been cheated on and she is being as rude as humanly possible.
Absolutely.
And like, me, myself personally. So like, I'm, for those of you who are just tuning in, I'm black. And I have dated many people in the past who had, how do they put it? Like, who had issues with their own identity and tried to impress those things upon me and definitely would like, date me knowing full and well, obviously, they, you know, they could see and they can hear that I'm black. But like it became very clear as like through dating them that that it's not what they were looking for at all. They were looking for Becky with the good hair. And, you know, when I broke up with these people, I said any number of nonsensical, rude, terrible, mean, inflammatory things just to let them know, like, because it like I guess, like, what I identified with when Beyonce said that is sort of just, like, you obviously have some sort of, like, this is your predilection. This is what you're into. This may have been what you thought you were signing up for when you met me. This is not what you're getting. So if that's what you want, she has this whole, like, verse in the interludes that was written by poet Warson Shire, where she's like, you know, if you want, like, I can wear, you know, her skin as my skin.
Her hair over mine, her hands as gloves, her teeth as confetti, her scalp a cap, her sternum my bedazzled cane.
It struck me as like, if this is what you want, you can have that. And then you can also choke on your own spit and die. That's sort of how I took Becky with the good hair. I think there was a friend of mine who tweeted, she's like, if you don't know what, if you don't know who Becky with the good hair is, it's probably you.
The accuracy. Yeah. And that's like another thing that I really loved about this album is that she did insert these like little, you know, like side phrases that only a certain group of people would know that what she's talking about. Or even like in Sorry, same song, right?
Yeah.
You know, she's like singing the hook and she's like, I ain't sorry. And she says, nigga, nah. Like, she's being very deliberate about how she is presenting these songs when she chooses to say Becky with the good hair or the N-word or whatever. Like, damn, you know, I'm just like, okay, girl, I see you. And I appreciate it. That's all I can say.
Well, Kiana, we played all our clips.
I know.
So, like, now that we've gone through our phases, how are you feeling?
I feel very relieved because I got to say way more things about this that I didn't get to in, like, a four-minute review. So it made me really think about certain parts of the album that I wasn't, that I hadn't accessed. And now I'm going to leave here and watch it all over again and go through many emotions and have a great day, hopefully.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was great. You were fantastic.
Thank you. This was like the most fun I've had in a long time.
You can follow NPR Music's Kiana Fitzgerald on Twitter at Kiana Fitz. And to recap the clips you have heard through all our stages of consuming Lemonade, the unbridled enthusiasm for Beyoncé came from The Read. The unlikely pairing of campaign strategy and Lemonade mania came from Slate's Trumpcast. The theory on Jay-Z's likely infidelity came from the ESPN podcast Jalen and Jacoby. The analysis of the socioeconomic implications of Beyoncé's imagery came from Talk Poverty Radio. And the explanation of Becky's and good hair was from BuzzFeed's Another Round. Whew, we played a lot of clips today. And listen, when you head over to iTunes to listen to Lemonade for the first or 50th time, could you do me a favor? Take a quick minute to rate Sampler on iTunes. It helps people find the show and it lets us know what you think about it. So, you know, just go do it. Rate Sampler on iTunes and then continue listening to Lemonade on repeat. And a quick note, on last week's show, we incorrectly ID'd a voice in one of our clips. We played a clip from the podcast Flash Forward, which featured host Rose Eveleth and her guest Shelley Ronan. I mistakenly referred to Shelley as Madeline Ashby. We are so sorry for the error. Stay tuned after the credits for a taste of what we are sampling next week. This episode was produced by Rose Reed, Sarah Abdurrahman, and myself with help from Kate Parkinson Morgan. It was edited by Annie Rose Strasser. Our theme music was made by Mike Avellian and our ad music was made by Mark Phillips. The show was mixed by Matthew Bowl. Sampler is a production of Gimlet Media. And next time on Sampler, what we know and what we don't know about serial host and co-creator Sarah Koenig.
He actually told us.
He told you.
He told us that that you used to be like super into improv.
This is so embarrassing that you're making me say this out loud.